Hey, this is Asia Dang.
And this is Laura Varney, and you're listening to Heavy Topics with Lightweights.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi, welcome to episode 13. Fuck.
We're almost done with the season, guys. We literally 5 seconds ago agreed that it was going to be a 15 episode season.
Like we said, always surprise. Doing less.
Surprise.
Doing the least, making decisions last moment, flying by the seat of our motherfucking pants.
So this episode is really interesting because we were actually introduced to our guest, Sophie, by one of our previous guests, Frances.
Yeah, she came along.
Yeah, she came along.
She was her friend.
Yeah.
And then we were like, hey, who are you? What do you do?
We're like, who are you?
And then we're like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So actually, speaking of Frances, a couple weeks ago, I took my dogs to get energy healing.
I saw that.
At this like doggy place in, I don't know what area it would be considered, but maybe like Highland Park. It was really interesting. And it made me think like, I need to schedule something with Frances. Because I have issues that need to be like pulled out of me. So
what are your issues?
Well, so the intuitive healing with my dogs, which sounds so fucking LA. Like, is there more
the
LA
most
statement?
LA thing ever?
But it's really interesting because whether you go to a healer or not, you know that your animals, they like feel your energy. So Luke, my younger dog, who's bigger, if you follow me on Instagram, he kind of holds on to my physical energy. So like when my body's not aligned, then he's not aligned, which actually makes sense because he's all kinds of fucked up all the time. And then Levi, the smaller dog, he holds on to my emotional energy. So when I'm feeling sad, he feels that and like holds on to that and tries to make me happy. So it's just like really interesting to have heard that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely might seem a little frou-frou-y, but if you've listened to our podcast, you kind of know like that's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really, really fucking cool. So
yeah, and the place looked really cute too.
The place was really cute. But that was actually kind of like my first healing to be a part of. And it was actually kind of confusing the way it was really informative, but it took me a while to process what she was saying because I don't like necessarily talk in like the metaphysical world. I just need someone to say, listen, like there's something in your like ancestral history that has you all kinds of fucked up and Levi's holding on to that. And we need to dig into that,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially what she said. But it took me a little while to like process what she said because I couldn't understand it in the moment.
Right.
So I actually do want to go to Frances and get like a Reiki healing and see what she says because it was really cool.
Yeah, you should.
And now that I understand how my dogs process how I'm feeling, it makes me actually want to be healthier, like mentally and physically too.
Yeah, to be a little more stable for them.
Yeah, because I'm all kinds of fucked up apparently.
Aren't we all?
I know. Anywho, that's my intro.
I just got back from an amazing trip and I want to share about it because I just think it's something I've never done before and it was really unique.
It looked so pretty.
Yeah. So I went to Mammoth during the summertime, which I've never done before. I've gone there. So if you're not from LA or California, Mammoth is up north. It's like a 5-hour drive from Los Angeles and it's a beautiful place to go like skiing, snowboarding, all sorts of winter activities. So I've been there several times to go do those things in the winter. But the rehab that I work for, One Method, we took our clients up there for a trip for like a weekend getaway. And we did all sorts of like outdoor activities. We did biking, mountain biking, hiking, horseback riding.
It looked amazing.
We attempted kayaking, but it was a little too windy and they told us we'd flip over.
Oh my God.
But it was just like, and I know this because like, and this ties into our podcast, this episode, but like connecting with nature is so important.
Oh, 100%.
And I've always felt that because as a kid, I grew up on like in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just like playing in the woods all the time. And so it was like,
and you like hiking, you like, I mean, we both like being outdoors.
The beach, yeah, the mountains, whatever. So, but just because I'm like, we all work so much, and then, you know, you go home and you're exhausted, and then you wake up and you do it again, and you kind of forget how important mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. But then you're in a place like the mountains, and it's like, I just felt so small, but like, I don't know, the smells, like there's like this sweet smell certain places in the mountains.
Also called fresh air.
No, it's like comes from a plant because it's only in certain places. And it's literally like, it's like a sweet smell. I'm not sure what the plant is, but, and yes, fresh air, like you can feel how clean the air is when it goes into your lungs mm-hmm. and like, I don't know, just like very crisp, and the views are just insane. Like the water was so beautiful, the mountains, the trees, everything. It was like, just like sometimes I would stop and look out and just be like, oh my God. Like,
wow.
It's stunning. But yeah, so that was really, really enjoyable. And it's really cool too, because exercise and fitness are so much a part of my life. Obviously it's like what I do, but a lot of that takes place in the gym. Mm-hmm. And so waking up in the morning and like going outside on a bike ride or going for like a long walk or hike or whatever, that replacing the in gym, like indoors workouts, just so, so nice and such a good change of pace.
I mean, you definitely need that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
I highly recommend it, even just for like a weekend getaway, even if you don't live in LA, like I'm sure somewhere close by, like I feel like we all have a place where we can drive like a couple hours just mm-hmm. to get away, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just made, I feel like it made such a difference.
And you felt better coming here, coming back, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very calming.
It's crazy how we kind of remove ourselves from nature, but once we're in it, we realize how important it is for our psyche.
Yeah, because it's like that's where we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I tell, since you brought up your home and how you lived in the woods, can I tell people the story of how your mom picked me up and I stayed at your house?
Yeah, of course. Such a good story.
I was working with Maxim Magazine years ago, and I was covering the Final Four, which happened to have been in Atlanta. And of course, with the Maxim coverage, we have a Maxim party. And I don't recall being like super like drinking a lot. So I actually think I might have been roofied or something. Because when I woke up the next morning, I was so like, I did not feel good.
You were really sick.
I was really sick. And then I had like 8 hours before my flight back to LA. And then Laura's mom picks me up in Atlanta. And I don't know like how long it is from your house to Atlanta.
But where you were probably like 30 minutes.
So she picks me up. She takes me to Laura's home. I sleep in her bed. Actually, when I got back to LA, I found out I had strep throat. So that might have been something too.
The worst.
But I slept in Laura's bed, and then her mom took me out with her friends to get Mexican food, and then she dropped me off at the airport. And by the way, your house is it is literally in the woods.
Yeah.
With like acres.
Yeah, 100 acres of woods. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a totally different world than like what we live in, you know?
And I haven't been back since.
Yeah, we should go.
I would love to go.
I need to go soon.
Yeah, I would love to go with you.
All right. Well,
review time.
Are we ready for review?
Oh my God.
We love reviews right now.
Is it going to be as good as last week's?
I don't know if that's possible.
I mean, last week's was poetic.
Last week's was beautiful. Okay. This is called Amazing Topics! 5 stars. I love all the content you ladies have been putting out. I just recently got into podcast, and I'm so glad this is the one I decided to consistently listen to because the conversations never disappoint. Also, wanted to mention that y'all shouldn't worry too much about the sound being too loud or too quiet. The first episodes I noticed it, but once y'all got feedback about it, I think it has been really great. Thank you for the time and thought you put into finding people with stories that need to be told.
Aww.
Someone's from the South.
With all those y'alls?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's your mom, maybe.
It's not my mom.
Because she doesn't listen.
She doesn't listen, number one. Number two, I don't even think she would know how to rate and review, but that's...
Oh my God. My mom has no idea how to download a podcast. No. She has no clue.
No.
Anyhow, that was really sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to get started on the episode, but be sure to subscribe. I don't know why'd you look at me like that?
Laura's being very sexual with a pole that's behind me. It's very weird.
Oh my God. You're weird that you would think of that.
What are you doing? You're like groping the fucking pole. What do you expect? It's right in my face.
How would I grope a pole? I just like put my hand
on
it. You're
giving it a hand job.
Oh my God. Anyways. Be sure to subscribe. I'm looking at her and I can't stop laughing. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Follow us at Heavy Topics on Instagram.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Why did we get all serious all of a sudden? Are we not drunk?
No, I'm super drunk.
Oh. It's weird.
Is it though?
Okay, bye. Welcome, Sophie.
Hey, Laura.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good. First, we must cheers because it's what we do. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I've seen you a lot the past couple weeks.
Feels nice. You guys have seen each other?
We've been hanging out, you know.
Oh, my God.
Behind your back.
Once.
It was one time.
A lot.
One time in multiple locations.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, why don't you explain why, first of all?
Oh, why we've seen each other?
Yeah.
Well, Sophie has a company where she does urban farming. And as you guys know, I'm the health and fitness director for a drug and alcohol treatment center. And one of the experiential treatments that we're doing with them is Sophie is coming and setting up our little gardens outside. And their clients are going to work with her to plant different fruits and veggies that will then go to the chef or to them themselves to incorporate into their meals.
That's awesome.
So it'll be an ongoing process where like every other week she works with our clients.
Yay.
It's really cool.
I need you to come and do that for my balcony.
Right.
Because I've tried.
I feel like you do a good job of that.
I'm trying. I had to kill my strawberry plant. It was taking too much water. I just didn't have the time. But it's like I feel like that's the direction we have to kind of move in just because agriculture is just so fucked right now.
Yes.
So I'm trying. I got the herbs down, but I have like a really sad tomato plant. And then I just have this like large balcony that I feel like could be really like well utilized for stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. After my initial like, yeah, it's like, well, I already killed a couple. So what's left?
But why? Just because you don't have the time to water them so much?
No. It's the strawberry plant just wasn't giving me life. It needed to be composted.
Why does that happen, Sophie?
Multiple reasons.
She's like, you're a mess. I don't know what to tell you.
That is a good way to understand how much it takes to grow a single strawberry.
It's crazy. I honestly thought, yeah, let me have this like strawberry plant and it's gonna give me like an abundance of strawberries. And didn't even get one.
Yeah.
For 2 months. I didn't
seriously
get one.
Yeah, well, strawberries only bear like a few times a year.
Yeah, well.
So you might get like, I don't know, 6 or 7 strawberries like from one plant.
It's so
now
crazy.
I feel guilty eating a pint of strawberries.
Just imagine like how many acres and people are working for that pint of strawberries that you're
well,
eating.
There is if
that
you
costs
go,
you like $4.
I forget the highway in Southern California. If
Five.
You're going, yeah, you pass the big strawberry fields,
all the fields.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always see people out there working.
It's crazy because I have like my herbs, which is originally what I wanted because I just hated going to like Whole Foods and buying like a plastic thing of herbs
for such a waste.
So I got really into it for the herbs. But even then you need like 3 cilantro plants to like make sure to cook what you want and then also make sure that tomorrow you have stuff to cook with too.
Yeah.
So it's just all these things that you didn't realize you needed for food that you like take for granted.
Right. And like if you notice, they go bad kind of quickly. So it's helpful to keep them on the plant. And so when you think about what you're getting in the grocery store, like how much waste is happening when people aren't buying what's there, like the day you're there or the next day, like all that is wasted.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, like if you go to the grocery store, let's say you see 300 apples, like maybe those will last a week or two. But what if like 300 apples aren't purchased? Like where does that food go after?
Landfill. There's so much food waste.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the problems.
Okay. But we should ask you to first introduce yourself.
That was a really good intro.
Well, how did you start?
It's natural.
Yeah. How did you start in your urban farming situation?
That's a good question. I was in a very sad state of myself. I kind of had a really difficult time like transitioning from high school to college. And so after my freshman year of college, I moved back in with my parents. And around that time, they decided to rip up their grass and put in like veggie beds because they were getting a CSA box.
What's that?
A CSA box is community supported agriculture, which means that like local farms are like providing a box with like two apples and some carrots and some lettuce. And then it would get delivered to my parents' doorstep every week.
They have that everywhere now.
Yeah. So that stands for community supported agriculture.
Okay.
And so then have you heard of like
imperfect
yeah,
produce?
Imperfect yeah, imperfect produce. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. So that's similar, but like they're specialized because they use produce that would otherwise be rejected from the grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents were like, why are we getting this delivered? Like we have a ton of space, we have a ton of sun, like let's just grow our own food. And so I just happened to be like very depressed and I got my wisdom teeth out, so I like wasn't really doing anything. And they built this garden and I found myself in it all the time. And it was very therapeutic for me and very healing. And I always knew like you grow food, like food comes from the ground. But I didn't realize that you could do it yourself. Like I just had never put those pieces together for mm-hmm. no real reason besides that like I didn't think about it.
I mean, that's the problem, right? We
yeah.
just go to the grocery store and we see everything in front of us.
Right.
And we don't understand how it came to
right,
be.
The process.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I had this like moment where I was like, oh my God, like why doesn't everyone do this? And like over the past, you know, 6 years, I've learned why people don't do this.
Which are?
It's very time intensive and labor intensive and you have to care.
You need space.
You need space. It costs money. Like my service that I provide is not inexpensive in my opinion. If you have the tools to do it yourself and like you know what you're doing, it can save you a lot of money, but the initial setup is expensive. It really requires like a change in lifestyle. Like you have to say, I'm going to commit these hours in my week to taking care of my garden. And a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's the biggest problem. It's like I see the value in it 100%, but like I can barely find the time to sleep with my yeah. schedule. So I can't imagine doing that.
I have an app that tells me when I need to water my plants and my herbs.
Really?
And stuff, just because I like,
yeah,
I don't have the
That's
time.
That's cool though.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like, oh shit, okay, I need to do this. But yeah, it's even though like I have a lot of plants in my apartment, even though I see those every day,
right.
the thought doesn't necessarily cross my mind right. that I need to water them now.
Right.
So it is like a change of lifestyle.
Yeah.
For
and
sure.
lack of space is a huge issue.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of us live in apartments.
Were your parents, did they grow things before you guys started the process or did you all learn how to do this together?
That's a really good question. They are really big nature lovers and I have always been really interested in just the outdoors. And I remember when I was a kid, like planting flowers and working in the garden. I don't specifically remember growing vegetables, but kind of what happened was I found myself out there every day. And so I kind of was like leading the charge on planting and switching out for the seasons and when to harvest. So I ended up learning a lot just like through experience. So when I started my business, I didn't have any like formal education. It wasn't until a few years later that I went back to school.
For?
I went to UCLA Extension. I did a 2-year horticulture program.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. But mostly I just like bought books on Amazon. And honestly, like the more time you spend in a garden, the more you realize. And I know I was telling you this, Laura, like when you're out there, you just notice things. Like, the garden is always changing from morning to afternoon to night. Like, the more you sit out there, the more you see what's happening. And that kind of, like, informs your decision-making. I think there's something very intuitive within us, like, once you tap into it, in just gardening and being in nature.
I mean, I love that point.
It's something that we used, like, totally. Not we, but, like, we used to do.
Ancestors, totally.
Yeah.
So, because you say that, and it just feels very, like, we feel very connected to it. What do you think, is there, like, a therapeutic piece that comes into that for you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are multiple studies showing that, like, having your hands in soil reduces your blood pressure, calms your mind. Hearing birds, seeing butterflies, like, they have so many therapeutic properties. So I know for me, like, I was extremely depressed when I started gardening. And I started loving it, and it started bringing me out of that place. But I think that that definitely could work for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Not just me. Yeah.
I could definitely see that. Cause even I'm not even at the level you are, but when I'm, like, transferring herbs from the pot to, you know, my container, just even, like, you're in charge of a life, kind of, in a sense. Like, you're putting something that will replenish you too.
Yeah.
So it's really cool, even at, like, the smallest level of herb gardening.
I mean, even, like, let's look at this studio. Like, these are fake plants, but we put them there for a reason, because we have a connection to things that look like nature. And people, there are so many studies showing that being outside makes people happy, reduces your anxiety. Like, that's not just placed here by accident, you know? Plants make you feel good. It's makes sense. I mean, we physically need them to survive. Yeah. So there has to be something in our brain telling us, like, oh, gravitate towards that. Like, that will make you, that will help, you know, increase your lifespan, make you feel good.
What was, why were you in a depression? What was going on in your life before you started this?
I had a very good high school experience. And then I kind of, I moved to New York, not knowing at all what I was getting myself into. And I just lost my community, it felt like. I was very unhappy. I gained a lot of weight. I just didn't feel like myself at all. And it took many months, even a year or two, to, like, get back to feeling like a new version of me. And that version included nature. I think I just felt like my life was really purposeless. I was, like, trying to pursue a career in fashion, and I was, like, going to bars. And then I was like, what the heck? I don't belong here.
This isn't what you want.
Yeah.
It's cool that you had that experience, though.
It is very cool.
And to make you understand that, like, that isn't what you wanted.
It was very cool, and I'm very grateful for it. But I kind of decided, like, I always had this kind of grand plan that I would, like, work in fashion and make enough money. And then when I was, like, 35, I would just, like, spend the rest of my time, like, swimming with whales.
Why whales?
Retire at 35.
I love whales. I don't know. I mean, I was a kid, but I, like, knew I wanted to be in nature, but I didn't see a way to, like, make money and pursue that. So yeah, that was my grand plan. And it quickly realized it did not work out. It was not going to happen.
I mean, there's nothing further apart from, like, New York fashion than
swimming with whales.
Swimming with whales, but also, like, gardening.
Planting food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So do you live in an apartment now?
I do live in an apartment. I'm very lucky because my current apartment has, like, this big garden space in the front, which I've kind of, like, co-opted. It's mine.
Claimed your own.
Yeah. And so I, like, keep all my plant materials there, and, like, my bags of soil and my shovels, and kind of need a lot of space. And
where in LA do you have an apartment where there's a garden in the front?
Very close to here. So there isn't actually a garden. It's all rocks. But I have, like, slowly been removing the rocks and planting in the ground.
Smart.
My landlord will never hear this. It's fine.
So do you, I mean, I feel like it's impossible, but do you only eat what you grow?
Oh no, not at all.
So where do you get your food that you don't grow?
That's a good question. I go to regular markets, like I'm a regular person. I go to the farmer's market. So I don't actually grow my own food. I grow food for other people at their homes. So when they have carryover, like I'll take that home and I'll make use of it or I'll give it away. Like this past 2 weeks, I've had like 20, 30 pounds of produce each week from one of my clients. And like all of my neighbors have benefited from that, which is really nice.
Why has there been so much excess from this one client?
Well, it is a house that is currently in between renters. But
so no one's picking.
Yes, but I'm there weekly and it is pretty massive. And so it's producing a lot of food. So for several weeks, I took all the food to the Hollywood Food Coalition, which is an organization like right in Hollywood. And they serve, I believe, 2 meals a day every day of the week to the homeless people in LA.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I got to donate. We brought a ton of food there. That was really nice.
So you go to your clients' places once a week, every client?
Either once a week, once every 2 weeks. And then sometimes people just want me to come back seasonally to like switch over for fall, winter, spring, summer.
How important do you think it is for people to start kind of getting back to nature in the sense where they need to be responsible for at least some of the food that they eat?
I think it's the most important thing that we're dealing with right now.
In what sense?
We are in the middle of a huge crisis, like an ecological crisis. It doesn't have to be this way, but people don't know how to change their lifestyles.
And what
yeah.
Specifically, what's the crisis that you're referring to?
Well, for example, July was the hottest month ever in recorded history. And every month before that in the past 10 years have followed that trend. So we're in trouble.
So just in general, the environment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you farm and like when you're outside all the time, like I just said, you have to be aware of that. Traditional farmers in the Midwest this year could not plant their crops because it was flooded. Months of flooding. I think that we need to start being responsible for our own food security in a lot of ways. Yeah.
I mean, I think the farming industry is just has been tough in general because it's very expensive and
totally.
It's all dependent on people buying your shit.
Yeah. I mean, most of the farming done in the States, as far as I'm aware, is partially subsidized by the government, more so with like dairy and meat farming. But yeah, like when you're relying on the earth and like unexpected weather events for your like income, it could be really difficult. I mean, I know like in the 40s when we were at war, like during World War II, the government had this whole thing about victory gardens. And it was like this big push like for people to plant their own food and grow their own food at home so that the food that the farmers were growing in the fields could be sent like to our soldiers.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's super really cool.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, super cool.
Wow.
So how do people's health, how does that aspect play into all of this?
Okay, well, here's an example of that. From the time that you pick a food to when you eat it, it loses nutrition. So if you have food that's sitting in the store for like a week, fresh produce, it is not as nutritionally viable as it was when it was first picked. So that's why a lot of the times, like you hear people say, you have to take your multivitamins because your food doesn't have the nutrients that it used to have. And that's part of the reason.
It's because our food's some of it's coming down the street. Some of it's coming from overseas.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is coming with chemicals in it.
Right.
I mean, your food might have an organic sticker, but organic, like according to the government, doesn't mean no pesticides. It means minimal pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know.
It's like no kill shelters. Like that's something I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they don't kill animals. They just don't kill that many.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so weird that they can say that, though.
You would think it'd be more, you wouldn't think it would be more heavily regulated, but like that shit matters.
But like, why say that if it's not true?
Like for
organic? I mean, I understand why they don't, but like for both, it's like, why are they able to say that if it's not true? False advertising.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are a lot of health effects, I think. I also just think that you have a greater appreciation of what you're eating.
Totally.
You have an emotional connection to it.
Well, it's just like, it's similar to cooking your own meal versus post-mating your meal.
Totally.
Right? Like last night I postmated Erewhon. There's a different connection and like sense of pride and accomplishment that you feel when you like make the meal and then sit down to eat it.
Right. And that's just cooking. Like imagine, I mean, I'll watch one beet grow for 3 months.
Yeah.
And I'll rip that out of the ground and I'll be like, holy cow.
Yeah. It's so exciting. I'm sure.
Yeah. It's totally, I mean, it's very rewarding.
So can you explain the process of what it's like when you get a client and like how you set everything up and then the maintenance and everything afterwards?
Yes. So people call me or they email my website and then I basically just first find out where they live to make sure it's like in a location that I would work. And then I go to their homes or their offices or their schools and I take some measurements. We look at like how the sun moves across the property and we design a garden together. So some people will have like small dogs, so they want a raised garden. Other people have just like a patch of dirt, so we'll put the garden right on the ground. We like go inside and we sit down and we talk about what they want to grow, like a potential irrigation system if they want maintenance. So it's usually like 30 minutes of walking around and talking and then 30 minutes of like figuring out what kind of foods they want to grow.
I mean, it's crazy. I see your posts on Instagram mm-hmm. and the size of the produce from your clients, massive.
Plants are magic.
How does that happen? How is something big versus something not big? Like, is it something that you're doing specifically?
That's the thing. So what I do is I manipulate the environment as best I can to provide the best results. I can never promise that something will grow. But I try and put the plants in the correct sunlight. I try and irrigate them properly, have the best soil with compost, and I talk to all my plants a lot. Like, no, I am not like responsible for the size of these plants, but I do the best I can to give them everything that they need so that they can be successful.
So after you have the initial setup and you have a 30-minute conversation outside and 30-minute conversation inside, what does it look like after that? What are the options, I guess?
I would say that the cool part about my business is that I work with the client to do whatever they want. So some people just want me to come seasonally, like twice or three times a year to switch out plants. And I do that. Some people want me every week. Some people want me to come only when they're there so I can teach them what I'm doing, which I love. I love to do that. Like my goal is not to get people hooked on maintenance from me, even though that's like a good source of income. Like when I first started, I had no maintenance intentions at all. But then I learned like, oh, people don't have time to do this. Mm-hmm. Like they need my help.
Have you seen like an uptick in people that want to grow their own produce and herbs and stuff?
I think culturally we are very plant obsessed right now, which is really cool. I mean, a lot of these plants are like indoor plants. I think that people in general are just really craving something that makes them feel connected, whether that's like yoga or meditation or being outside. As I mentioned, I think people, I mean, we need to be outside. That is like in our DNA. We evolved like that. You know, just like plants breathe, we breathe. It might be a little bit different elements, but it's all the same. And so I do think that people are very interested in eating locally. I think farm to table is like obviously really hot, mm-hmm. like phrase right now. Even if people don't really understand what that means or they're not actually getting a farm to table experience, I think it makes them feel good. And I think we're like on a track to make that more common. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky because we live in LA and it's sunny and like we have the ability to garden year round.
It goes back to like, I guess the whole organic sticker is, how do you make sure that the food that you eat is grown and produced and coming mm-hmm. from where it says it's coming from?
Yeah. I mean, know your farmers, which is hard, or that's grow why, your
like,
own food.
Like farmers market, is that a good place? Like, is I that a trustworthy so. Place to I go shopping?
I
think so.
I mean, yes, that is, but there are so much more like environmental benefits to growing your own food if you're able to and if you have the space. Because, like, let's say I go to the grocery store and I see, like, bananas from Venezuela. It's like, well, when did they come here and how did they get here? And, like, was it by boat? Was it, like, at least partially? Was it driven? I mean, that costs money. That costs fossil fuels. That costs time and energy. So if you can walk outside and get your own banana from your own tree, you're doing a big favor to the earth, in my opinion.
Can we plant bananas here?
Yeah, you totally can.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long does it take to get a banana?
It depends how old the tree is when you buy it. But you will see bananas around LA. I mean, when people first settled here, they planted fruit trees so that they would have fruit. Somehow we've gotten away from that. But if you walk around, you'll see figs, you'll see oranges, you'll see bananas.
I've seen oranges and lemons loquats. And limes. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm honestly, this might sound weird, but I really do think that, like, agriculturally, mm-hmm. we are so fucked.
Yeah.
And one day we're going to walk into the grocery store and there will be no food for us.
Like an apocalyptic situation.
Yeah. Like, there's just, I don't know whether it's going to be like the environment is making it impossible mm-hmm. for, you know, major farmers to mm-hmm. grow stuff, or things that we're getting overseas. There's going to be some kind of, like, I don't know, tariff presidential situation that people just don't
very
wanna,
likely.
Yeah. So it's like, I hate to be like a doomsday, like no, prepper situation.
That's a thing. I mean, I know some very reputable people who are doomsday preppers.
You do?
Yeah. I just had a meeting with one. Not actively awaiting doomsday, but like harvesting their own rainwater. Like, why shouldn't we all be doing that? I think people are really trying to fight nature, and it's like, you can't.
Yeah. How do you harvest your own rainwater?
In the most like simple terms, buckets.
You set up buckets. And then what do you do with it? You drink from it, or
well, you save it. So like, for example, when it rains, and we're getting slightly off topic, but it's all on topic. When it rains, like in LA, where does the rain go?
Down the drain.
Right. So where does the drain go?
To the ocean.
Right. So we are having like millions of gallons of fresh water falling from the sky being directed into the ocean where we cannot use it. At the same time, we are
fresh?
In a constant drought.
Isn't it super polluted?
The rainwater?
Yeah.
No, it's like osmosis. It's like smart water.
It's from the sky.
Yeah. And you can filter it.
Yeah, but it goes through the fucking pollution, no?
No, before it hits the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to know more about this. So the rain goes into the bucket, yeah. And then what do?
Okay, so for example, instead of turning on your tap, you use that to water your plants for the next month. It has to be closed, or else you'll get like mosquitoes and algae and all that. Or in case of an emergency, you get one of those like charcoal filters or whatever, and you use your water for that.
I've replaced my Brita with charcoal filters.
I was extremely impressed with your eco Instagram.
She's really good.
I'm really trying, and it's hard. I mean, you just saw me eat Cheez-Its out of a fucking bag.
No,
so
I mean,
it's hard, but I like, it's
can't do it all.
For me, it's like the little things. And honestly, it's like the growing my own herbs has really helped kind of quicken the process of me getting my shit together.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we've been talking about this. We're so like separated mm-hmm. from the reality of where we're getting our shit.
Yeah.
So if the last thing I can do is toss one less Brita filter in like the dumpster, then I'll do that.
I was extremely impressed.
Oh my God. Oh, that makes me so happy.
So what steps do you take to be like eco-friendly?
That's
other
a good
than
question.
Planting food, I mean, obviously.
I don't eat meat. I'll eat fish like once or twice a week. I don't eat any, nothing that came from a farm. I don't go out.
Nothing that came from a farm.
I'm sorry. Like I don't eat pork, chicken, cows, lamb, like.
And that's just intentionally.
That's I mean, animal agriculture is one of like the greatest sources of greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah. Well, it's also like the root of the Amazon rainforest burning
that's
down.
That's very correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember learning about that in college like 6 years ago.
And it's only gotten worse.
But yeah, reducing your, like any animal products that you use. I don't buy water bottles. I think little things like that help other people like correct themselves on their behavior. Mm-hmm. I think it's more a cultural change. Because there's a lot of things that we do that are inconvenient. But we do them anyway because it's like part of how we live. So just like, you know, there's a big push to get rid of plastic bags in the grocery stores. Like, I think if you're a woman and you carry a purse, like put a fork in there, you know, that's not that big of a deal.
For sure.
Um, so So I think there's little things that we can do. Obviously, like, that's not the crux of the issue. The issue is, like, transportation, airplanes, fossil fuels, animal agriculture, industry. But I think that personal action is really important. And leading by example is really important.
Do you see those kind of big money industries changing at all in the future?
No.
Yeah.
I think they're too powerful. And I think people, it's so crazy. Like, there was so much push for the Women's March. And when it comes to things like living and being alive and breathing and drinking, people are just kind of apathetic. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, someone else will solve this issue. But no one else is solving it. No one's solving it. And I think my goal, if at all possible, is just to help people, even for 10 minutes a day, be in nature, even if that just means like a garden in their backyard.
I think the main issue with, you know, the environment and is that it's hard to understand.
Yeah.
Like, I saw this clip the other day of the someone in Florida talking about the hurricane saying, why doesn't the Navy just dump ice water in the water? Did you see this?
Wait, no, what?
There's a video of a guy talking about the hurricane and saying, why can't the government fix this? Tell the Navy to dump ice into the ocean to cool down the ocean. Tell Army to fly airplanes in the opposite direction of the hurricane so it negates the hurricane. Like, that's like actual thoughts that people have. So it's like, how can you fix the environment when people don't understand the issue?
At least people are like thinking about it.
I mean, I guess.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or deny that the issue exists.
Yeah.
At all.
So, I mean, that's why the Women's March is like so powerful, because we can see what the issue is, and we can see a way to quote unquote fix it. Whereas the environment is who sees the issue?
It's such a big monster.
But that's an interesting point. Like, maybe people just don't understand. And so environmental education is super important. And like, I kind of hope that people really like looking at pretty food, and then they follow me, and then maybe once a week I say like, hey, here's one thing you can do to make a difference, like make a positive impact. And then that sort of like starts seeping in. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty slow burn.
It's a very slow burn.
Yeah. It's too slow. But
do you think it's too late for us to fix our environment?
I don't want to say that because...
But do you?
I think that meaningful change should have happened many, many, many years ago. But it's never too late. The Earth is very resilient. We and other species will be the ones most impacted, but the Earth will be fine after us. And like, we just got here as a species. Mm-hmm. I often I follow a lot of like climate scientists on Twitter, and I often just like go to bed in sort of a state of like dread and anxiety. But you got to just do what you can.
But it's crazy how many people still like don't believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like,
but I bet you if you look at their bank account, you'll see why they don't believe it. And it's because they're getting paid by the fossil fuel industry, mm-hmm, or by the animal agricultural industry.
I mean, there is a very concerted effort in our country to sow doubt into the minds of people who believed in climate change and started talking about climate change. So it wasn't a mistake.
It's really scary because the people that are in the power to change this, mm-hmm, will never, because they won't do any money.
Yeah, just like risking the future of all of humanity for what?
An extra house.
It feels fake. It really sometimes to me feels fake. I think that's maybe it's just overwhelming for people.
So what do you think we as a society should do to change that?
I think the first thing that we need to do is make climate a priority with the people that we vote into office. Because as much as cultural change is important, structural change is important. I know that like I have been sort of tirelessly advocating for climate 2020. And like, that's the only thing I care about. Like, honestly, if Donald Trump tomorrow were to be like, hey, all of my political stances are the same, but I want to fight climate change and here are my plans, I would vote for him in 2020. That's all I care about at this point, because nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, what does it matter if I can get an abortion if I won't have clean water? I think it really takes like regular, cool people, respected people to make a stand, not just like science nerds or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it needs to be cool. It needs to become cool, and it needs to become unacceptable to behave any differently. I mean, kind of like the women's movement.
I was about to say, recently. Kind of like the women's yeah. movement. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a trend. It's a cool thing.
Right. It has to become cool. There was many times that I was like, you know, really embarrassed of caring about the environment. And now I'm kind of just like, fuck it. Yeah.
I'm doing this for your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you have anything that is like your favorite thing to plant?
Ooh.
Like what's most rewarding to you, I guess?
I think beets and carrots are fun. Anything that grows underground, because then you get to check and you're like, oh my God, it's there. It's been there.
How can you tell when it's growing underground? Like, how do you check?
You can tell by like the leaves. So the leaves grow up top. So root vegetables like carrots, radishes, parsnips, beets are all growing underground. And so it's not like they'll pop out a little when they're ready, but you kind of just got to like scoot your fingers in and see what's up. And that's always really exciting.
What do you do with the green part of carrots?
You can put them in a smoothie.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Whenever you're at the grocery store and they're like, do you want the greens? I always say yes. Or just compost them. Or you could like cut them up small and put them on a salad. They don't taste amazing. They kind of have a weird texture. Beet greens, I mean, people totally eat beet mm-hmm. greens. Radish greens, you can eat.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily, because what do? You buy them from the grocery store and you cut off the greens yeah, and right. you toss
throw
them
away. Yeah.
But you can actually use the whole part of the produce.
Why totally. Did we start throwing that away?
I don't know of any recipes that traditionally use carrot tops. But I do know that people used to have chickens for their eggs, and those types of things like carrot tops could go to the chickens.
Mm. I so want chickens.
Yeah, same.
Fun fact, from when we were like back in the day until now, the ratio of omega-3s to omega-6s was much higher. So it was like we would get like the ratio would be 1 to 2 or like 1 to 5 or 6 of omega-3s versus omega-6s. And now it's like 1 to 10, 1 to 20. So we're getting like way more omega-6s than omega-3s.
How do you get omega-6s?
Well, let me explain. The reason why we're getting more, less omega-3s is because we're eating less of a variety of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So back in the day, people were like killing certain animals and eating like every thing from them or like tons of different types of nuts and seeds and fruits and veggies. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of people now have to supplement omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be really helpful just by like getting that up.
That's kind of what I was saying about like the produce that you see in the store. I just think that being more conscious of your meat intake and dairy intake is really all it is. Like even if everyone were to cut out meat from their diet one day a week, it would make a huge difference.
Remember when
we had meatless Mondays.
There you go. Did you have that in school?
No, we used to have an eco-friendly lifestyle blog called Ecoistas.
No way.
That was our first gig together.
Yeah, it was our first gig.
When was that?
That was right like after grad school.
7 years ago? Yeah. 6 years ago?
And so every Monday we would have meatless Mondays and like post different like meatless Monday recipes.
Cool.
Recipes. And it's actually quite easy to do so.
You want to know how we made our business cards? This is the coolest thing we did. Oh, also yeah. super
was
lame,
it on,
but
like,
cool.
Fruit skins.
Damn.
Oh shit! Oh, so sounds lame.
No, because that's not even possible. So don't worry.
No, so we would use like.
Which, by the way, we had business cards, and we had like no followers. Why did we have business cards?
Just in case.
Was this pre-Instagram?
It was the beginning.
Yeah, like 2011, 2012 or something.
So we would take like old pieces of cardboard or paper or whatever that was going to be thrown away. And we had a stamp and we stamped.
I mean,
and
that's
cut
awesome.
Them out.
That's so cool.
I mean, we're so.
It really, do
were
we
they
have
all different avant-garde. Sizes?
No, we cut them in the same set. We cut it in the same
we
size.
We like measured it.
Ish.
Or whatever.
That's awesome.
It was actually, that was a really good idea.
It was a really good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho.
He's reminiscing. Yeah. We should do that again.
Reminiscing of times. I know.
We're never having a business card again.
I know. What's a business card? Here's my Instagram.
Sure.
Here's my Instagram.
Look me up.
What are some things because I feel like a lot of our listeners don't have a home, don't have a yard. Mm-hmm. What are some simple transitions that or changes they can do in their rented apartment? To be better for the environment and then for their health in terms of, I don't know, shit.
I think a huge thing we can do is stop throwing away food scraps and food in general. So like if your food gets moldy, like I have a brown bag, I keep it in my freezer and I put all my food scraps in there and then I take it and I compost it.
Where do you compost?
That's a good question. I take mine to my parents' house.
Okay.
Cause I am lucky that I can do that. Mm-hmm. But, there are some, there's not enough of them at all, but there are composting stations where you can bring your green scraps. I know you know about this.
Yeah. Go to lacompost.com, I believe. Right. I take my compost to someplace like literally 15 minutes away, but you're right. There's not enough, community composts at all in LA. Yeah. It's wild. Okay. So compost is one.
And even if you, the thing is that you can keep your compost in your freezer for ever. So even if you don't have time to take it to like a compost drop off, it can just stay in your freezer. And if you need to, like, put it in the green bin, but it doesn't need to go into the landfill bin.
And it's crazy because even the act of composting, like just the simple act of knowing how much food you're wasting will keep you from wasting.
Totally.
I have a question. I just want to, for our listeners, because you said the green bin.
Yeah.
I think that the trash bins are really confusing for some people.
They are, and they're ineffective.
Right. Yes. Okay, that's what I've heard too, is that they don't actually do what they say they're going to do. Can you give us a little more information on that?
Sure. So recycling is sort of a farce. Mm-hmm. Very, like, the idea that, oh, I can buy this plastic water bottle and it will get recycled. Like, it takes so much energy to recycle one plastic bottle. And doesn't often get recycled. So up until this year, China was taking, and some other countries were taking, like 70% of our trash. And they no longer do that. And so, like, we were taking all of our trash, shipping it overseas, and then they would separate it and then they would sell it for like smaller pieces or whatever. So
sell, what do you mean?
So they would like sell, so like they would break down the plastic and you can sell like, they're the called lids. Like nurdles.
Yeah, like the little circle.
Yeah, the little circle. Oh, yeah.
Okay. To make something.
To make other things. I see. It's like a very energy intensive process.
Yeah.
The bins are not great. I would say like just the less you can throw away, the better.
And a lot of things can't be recycled.
Right. Yeah, totally. They can't.
I mean, regardless, if you're buying a plastic bottle, it's a plastic bottle.
Yeah.
And plastic, like, you can recycle it, but it's still plastic.
Right. And plastic is just oil. You're just like, that plastic is just made from oil. So that's just, again, the fossil fuel industry. It's, I mean, it's so difficult. Our world is just physically, literally covered in plastic. It is so hard to escape. And a lot of the people making the majority of the plastic are not taking responsibility. Like Starbucks got rid of their straws, but they have an entire cup that's plastic.
Yeah. Is there like a hierarchy to what products are more easily recyclable? Like, obviously plastic would be low, but we have glass and we have aluminum.
I don't really feel guilty about using aluminum. That's just my own,
because it's like so easy to recycle.
Yeah, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, so like I think heavy plastics are easier to recycle because they're more durable, whereas like plastic bags or like Ziplocs or like Saran wrap, you can't really do anything with that.
There's no solution, really.
On top of being more eco-friendly, if you have someone who lives in an apartment and doesn't have like a large outdoor space, like Asia has a really nice patio, but a lot of people don't. Yeah. What is is there something that they can plant? Is there a way that they can do something to?
Yes, so there are community gardens. We do not have enough. Like, New York has a ton of community gardens.
Really?
Yeah, Manhattan has a lot.
Where? They have no space. On roofs?
I know Alphabet City, like past the East Village, has a ton. But I think that...
And a community garden means a space where people can go to grow their own.
Right, they can like rent a box or two. But I think in general, we need more public spaces for nature. And I think that people can support public spaces like public parks and push for public spaces. I mean, there's so many empty lots in LA that... There's one right next to my apartment, and every day I'm like, if I could plant food in this, I could feed all of West Hollywood.
That's crazy.
It is. Wait, we should like advocate for that.
Why are there so many empty lots?
I mean, real estate is so lucrative.
Yeah.
And in some ways, you would make a lot of money like building an apartment building on your property. But building a garden in a community space brings so much more to the community that's already there than a new apartment building. I mean, I know we need housing, but those apartments being built in those spaces are not affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
At all. They're unaffordable housing. But I think like a push for public spaces is really important.
How do we do that?
I don't know. You talk to your local. I don't know. It's so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, like, for example, Tree People is a really awesome organization, and they have community planting days where they plant street trees. And I know that you can sign up. Like, I've done it twice. You just put your name down, you show up, and you plant a tree on a Saturday morning, and you go home, and it's great. I mean, I would love to have more volunteer days with my job. And people ask me all the time, like, can I come to work with you?
That would be a great idea, actually.
I would love to have... The thing is that I'm in other people's homes.
Oh, that's true.
But I would love to have a space. I mean, that's like my ultimate dream, but I would love to have a space where anyone could come and like spend the day and, you know, pick their own food and do some gardening and eat lunch outdoors. And
have you heard of Apricot Lane Farms?
Yes. So those are the biggest little farm people.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a farm like an hour and a half north.
Yeah.
But they made a movie about it.
Called The Biggest Little Farm. It's a very inspiring movie. It's like this couple that was living in a little apartment in Santa Monica, and they ended up buying a massive piece of property, and they transformed it. It's like the Garden of Eden over there. I've never been there.
Wow. I'm trying to go volunteer there.
Whoa.
So there, you can volunteer and go from like 8 to 11.
Just for one day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like that thing that we were talking about people's just like our need to connect with nature, like someone like you who has such a busy schedule and already does so much good, like would take a full day to go drive an hour and a half to like work in the dirt in the sun,
because we crave that.
I think so, yeah. But I think that if you want to make an impactful difference, then you can support things outside of your home, like going to the farmer's market. I mean composting is huge. Refusing like plastic waste. I mean, even people that live in an apartment, if they have a rooftop, like get all your neighbors together and be like, hey, we have this empty rooftop. Does anyone, like, let's reach out to the landlord and let's try and grow food up here. But I think there's a lot people can do. I think volunteering is really important. I think just like talking about it. And I'm so grateful that you guys like wanted me on and let me talk about climate change, even though that wasn't really the goal, but we got there because it's all interconnected.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. all tied together. I think it's all equally as important to discuss.
But I think like making room for nature and green spaces, and I think that it's possible to have greener neighborhoods if people think about it, you know, and care. I mean, the city will give you free trees. The city will give every resident like 2 free trees.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Where are they getting the trees from?
They're grown different, like Tree People grow some of them. It's like there's an organization called City Plants. Yeah, you can get free trees for your parkway.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some initiatives out there that people just don't know about, and then there's some initiatives that don't exist that need to.
Mm-hmm.
But
what are some of the ones that don't exist that need to?
I personally have a huge issue with plastic turf. I absolutely hate it. Plastic turf on soil, it to me is like murder. Mm-hmm. Because soil is living, and soil with plants growing on soil, you can take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and when you cover that soil in plastic, you kill all of the microorganisms living in it. And on top of that, the plastic breaks down into microplastics. And so when it rains, not only is that soil not capturing rainwater, like what we were talking about, but the microplastics from the turf are washing into our oceans, into our air. Our kids are playing on that. It also heats up really hot and like hurts little doggy paws.
Mm-hmm.
The dog park at my complex has,
I mean, all the dog turf. Parks in our complexes have, because it's easy to clean.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take that as much water.
Right. I mean, I'm not an advocate for grass at all, but
why?
Well, so grass is like the number one crop grown in the United States for nothing. I mean, we plant it, we water it, we mow it, we fertilize it.
Like, it looks nice, but other than that, doesn't do much.
I think looking nice is definitely a matter of opinion. Like, when I see grass, I like shudder.
Interesting. I'm so surprised that you're not a proponent of grass.
So grass is not a native plant. There are grasses that are native plants to California, but the type of grass we use is not. And so actually when you plant grass, not only is it water intensive, but it requires mowing, and mowing you use like gas powered blowers and mowers. Mm-hmm. And so that's just releasing gas, carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. It takes a lot of fertilizer, and when you water fertilizer, it runs out into the oceans. It creates a lot of problems there. Grass provides no habitat. Like, have you ever seen like a bird living in grass?
It's a good point.
Mm-hmm. There's no habit. I mean, there are so many species that live here with us, and the grass provides no habitat for that. So no, I do not like grass, but more I don't like plastic turf. So I don't think it should be legal to cover the soil with plastic. And that's another thing where it's like, oh, you want plastic turf because it looks like a living plant, and we are bound to life, but it's not, it's just fake. And
you're killing the living organism.
Yes,
underneath.
And it breaks down into the atmosphere, and then we're eating and drinking and, you know, breathing in plastic. So
there's so many issues.
Yeah. So that is one initiative that does not exist that I think should.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes is true, but
so much to think about.
The more you talk about it, I think the better. And there are so many alternatives that could make for like a more beautiful and a more ecologically diverse world.
Well, thank you for enlightening us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Where can our followers find you?
I'm on Instagram at UrbanFarmsLA. That's what I update the most. You can find my website, www.urbanfarmsla.com. That's about it. At UrbanFarmsLA.
Cool.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for all the valuable information.
Thanks for all the questions.
I'm going to look at grass differently now.
I know. It makes me sad.
Yeah.